This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The news gets better for the ACC on the other side of the bracket. Jay Vidovich has got a steamroller going,
hot.
Pack.
Pitt's hot.
I mean, the other day he gave us a lot of reasons to, you know, be concerned about the match with Washington and everything else. And the Panthers went out and threw another shutout, beat the Huskies 3-0. Valentin Noel, friend of the show, will join us at 9:30. He had a goal. Jakusson and Petkovic also scoring. And Campuzano recorded 4 saves and another clean sheet. How about this? I mean, they have just steamrolled this deal.
Well, they've scored 13 goals in their 3 matches. 13. And they are on fire. They, you know, Dallin told you, hey, they like to attack, attack, attack. And that's exactly what they have done to the NCAA field. So, ironically, North Carolina makes it to the College Cup for the 9th time for the men. For Pitt, that's their very first appearance in the College Cup. And so, I would tell you, Wes, now we basically have the final 4 set for both the men and the women in soccer. I think we need to do a congratulations, or at least not necessarily congratulations, but recognize Indiana, Marshall, and Santa Clara for screwing up our dreams of having 8 ACC teams in the College Cup, 4 in the men, 4 in the women, because other than those 3 teams, Santa Clara, who ironically beat Clemson in the women's side, Marshall, who ironically beat Clemson on the men's side, and Indiana, they're the only 3 that do not have ACC ties. And that's how good this league is. Now, granted, the object's to win it. Get to the cup. That's cool. It's awesome. It's a terrific accomplishment. But the object now is, hey, let's go close the deal. So we'll see if the ACC can take care of business moving forward. But you got to like the chances that on the women's side, 3 of the 4 teams are from the ACC, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia. And from the men's side, Pitt and UNC make up half the field left on the men's side. So a great, great run for the league in soccer.
You mentioned that Pittsburgh gets to the College Cup for the first time. This is just the 2nd team sport in Pitt's athletics history to reach the NCAA semifinals, joining the 1941 men's basketball team.
It's crazy. I would have taken that bet and lost. If you would have thrown it on me yesterday, I would have said, well, I'm going to go false, and I would have been wrong, 100% wrong. But they're hot, though. I mean, they're just on fire offensively. Oh, they're just scoring at will. It's been great. Yeah.
It brings up an interesting subject, and it's one we can – the schools that have won – and I'll go back to the statement we had yesterday, the tweet from Adam Lucas about what every student at Carolina who's gone through 4 years since 1977 has had at least one athletic team win an NCAA championship in their history. And, like, that student is now 60-some years old. Let me go back and add this. The number of schools that win these multiple NCAA championships in a season, counter to that, you have schools like Pittsburgh that may not have an NCAA championship in its team sports history. Georgia Tech didn't win one till after the turn of the century. I want to say about Brian Shelton in women's tennis won the NCAA championship in Athens. I mean, there are schools that don't get the team. And by the way, college football, those are not NCAA issued championships. Pack, how many times we have to remind ourselves of that, right? But those schools, they're schools that don't have as many national championships as others who seemingly have a bunch of them. So I just thought I'd pass that along, because when I saw that stat this morning about Pittsburgh in 1941 men's basketball, it shows you just how tough it is to get to the thing sometimes, let alone win it. And certainly we wish the best to both Carolina and Pittsburgh as the College Cup on the men's side unfolds this weekend.
Yeah, I know this doesn't have anything to do with the ACC, but that's why when Stanford won another national championship this year in women's basketball, I think it was like, it's 44 straight years they've won the national championship. And to me, it's one of the most remarkable stats, not only in college world, but in sports. When you realize how hard it is to win a national championship, I don't care what the sport is.
Sure.
It could be horseshoes, cornhole. I don't care what it is, equestrian. You know, when you're the best of whoever plays in college athletics, that's an accomplishment. So, again, we are spoiled rotten in this league. We always think about it from a basketball perspective first. Clemson's obviously been on a great roll when it comes to football here in recent memory. But, man, the spring sports, the Olympic sports have been dynamic and spectacular in the ACC.
Sure have. We got a great show for you. David Teal coming up, Karen Shelton in the 8 o'clock hour. Softball awards at 9 o'clock, Valentin Noel of Pittsburgh behind that. We'll throw a little true-false in there. And we got a couple of things in this hour that are basketball-related that deserve some discussion. And one of them is coming up next. There is a possibility that the competition committee could ratify, you like the way I say all this, a rule about flopping. But it's not the flopping you're thinking of. There it is. You see that? How about that? Now, that one is the old school one. The one we saw a moment ago, that's the new school flopping. We'll get into some of this when we come back. Packer and Durham on ACC Network. Good morning.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Oh, see? Playing your fight song this morning.
I'm just going to let it play a little bit. I need a little energy on a Tuesday. People drink. Some people drink coffee. I listen to AC/DC. Hey, it's a lot cheaper. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. All right, let's get into officiating because this always stirs people's emotions. 7:16 in the morning.
Especially you.
I love it when the smart people have committee meetings and let's come up with new rules because nothing makes anything more exciting than we're going to come up with more subjective calls to make the game more controversial and longer.
And longer.
Let's go to the monitor, shall we? Let's go to the monitor.
You remember when those two-hour basketball games used to be played? Do you remember those games that we used to have in 1 hour, 50 minutes, 1 hour, 47? Guess what?
Forget it.
Those aren't happening anymore.
Forget it. How about the next batch of ideas, Wes? Let's unfold some of these.
I got to tell you, though, Pac, and I'm not saying I'm coming to their defense on this, but I get this one. More under further review, pardon the pun, I understand where the Class B technical foul might be called for flopping. Now, let me say here at the top, and I know people aren't going to hear this all the way, so I may repeat it two or three times. This is not the block charge flop that has started to be instituted. This is strictly a faking of the flop in an offensive pattern. Okay, so in other words, if you have a jump shooter, here's the best example. Watch this. Was he touched? And he falls down there and he wasn't touched. That now would be a technical foul. And that might be two. There you go.
It's terrible. It's a terrible rule. Let me tell you why it's a terrible rule.
But the foul would be, in that case, the foul would be on Grayson Allen.
There's no foul. Just swallow the whistle and play. This is what drives me crazy. People just decide, hey, you know what? We're on a committee, so we've got to – if we come out of this committee and have – here's our resolution. We have nothing to say. People go, well, that's the most ridiculous. Well, why are you on the committee? Why is it a foul? How about this idea? A guy falls down after he takes a shot. Hey, you better get back on defense. There is no foul. There is no technical. There is no anything. Get up and go play defense. Why are we making another rule to stop the flow of the game that now becomes subjective? Did he flop? Did he not? I hate this rule. I hate the concept of this rule. We've got too many rules. That's why games last 2 hours and 23 minutes. It's why television ratings go down because people go, I just don't want to make the commitment. Get moving. We need to take the rule book instead of adding, here's a paragraph 1A dash the ninth power. Screw that. How about this? If you hack the guy, it's a foul. Otherwise, we're going to play basketball. We're going to play football. Let's move on. The rule books are ridiculous. This shouldn't even be a conversation. Well, this should not even be a conversation. If a guy takes a three and falls down, why is that a technical? It's not a technical. It's just a lousy play. It's a lousy play. It's stupid. You can't convince me otherwise.
Well, the salesmanship involved in some of these plays
is what
has created guys on the floor, and some of this I think has also led to injury, which has also become a discussion point among coaches and officials and things of that nature. Now, second part to this is the Class B technical foul. Now, this is kind of where the management of the game gets tricky. This would be a Class B technical foul. So the defending team, essentially, like the blue team in this particular case, would go to the other end and shoot one free throw.
Oh, please.
And the player in the case of the Grayson Allen drive would not be charged with a foul. See, not a personal foul. That'd be a technical foul.
So
the management of the fouls and all the other things, because this does differ, what I was saying earlier, this does differ from the block charge situation that you have, right, which is a personal foul. And all of a sudden, that's the gray area you're going to deal with. Now, here's the good news on this. All this still has to be approved by the competition committee,
which would
occur somewhere in the early part of June.
Yeah, we'll get another committee.
Right.
We got one committee coming up with terrible ideas to waste more time to give to the official committee, who will then debate it forever and ever. And then maybe, if we're not sure, we'll get a third party to come in to discuss whether Grayson Allen flopped. Of course he flopped. It's no technical. Just get up and go to the next play. The whole thing is stupid.
Let me give you the
stupid.
All right, let me give you the critical piece of language here real quick, and then we're going to move on to another topic you're going to be thrilled to hear about. The basic technical foul would be for falling to the court despite not being contacted after field goal attempts. Then, underneath the basket, dribblers who bob their head to simulate being contacted, and players who act like they were the recipient of contact despite not being touched. This is a totally different deal than the other stuff that we talked about in the past. Now, here's another proposal. Before you react, I want to tell you this one real quick. I know I'm wearing you down. You were so fired up to have that great bump music.
Can we play
ACDC?
And
I'm wearing you down here before 7:30.
Can you just play ACDC in my ear so I don't have to listen to Wes try to justify this? Because this is a terrible idea.
I'm not justifying anything. All right, here's the other part. What do you think about live stats and live video on the bench next season for coaches to use during timeouts?
I don't care.
On tablets.
I don't care. How about that? I don't care. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm drinking bourbon. I have dogs. The pizza is going to be delivered. Do I care if Hubert Davis has a tablet? The answer is no, I don't. Here's the other thing. 100% of the people watching an ACC game do not care if Tony Bennett goes to his assistant and say, boys, what's the stat line on player X? We do not care. Let them have tablets. Let them wear Astro helmets. I don't care what you do, Wes. It's got nothing to do with basketball. The games are forever. If you want to have a guy on the three-point line flop, get off your butt and go play defense. It's not a technical. We're not stopping the game. Nobody got offended. It was a bad shot. If it goes in, great. Counts for three. If it doesn't, it's zero and it's the other team's ball. A technical? We're gonna huddle around the masses while the coaches look at their tablets and the referees look under the hood forever so you and Corey Alexander can go fill for 4 minutes before the game's at 48-32 and we're already at the two-hour mark and we still have three more television timeouts? This rule is so stupid that I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It's dumb. Absolutely asinine, and the committees who need to have a committee so we can have a vote, somebody bring in the croissants, somebody wake up Mark Emmert, somebody told him, hey, July 1st, name, image, likeness, and oh, by the way, we're going to figure out whether Grayson Allen flopped. Of course he flopped. It's not a technical. Move on. The whole thing is stupid. Stupid. Here's an idea, referees. Get the block charge call right. Let's learn that one first. Then we'll worry about whether or not a guy taking a 43-footer who all of a sudden pretended he tripped over an ant should be a technical. I mean, how ridiculous can this get? Instead of trying to make the rules more complicated, here's an idea. Why don't you guys get in your subcommittee meetings and your Krispy Kreme donuts and Bojangles biscuits and figure out a way to get the rule book from being this thick to this thick? Then that way the games can be played under 2 hours and we can move on with our lives. The whole thing is comically stupid. Who would have ever thought, oh my God, did you see that guy flop from 42 feet? Yeah, he's a moron. He should get back on defense. It was a terrible shot. It's not a technical foul. I'm done. Can we play AC/DC now for the next 3 minutes? Because I'm done with this.
All right. Can I put you down then as a no?
Wait a minute. Let me get a... Hold on. I'm going to have a subcommittee meeting, and I'm going to get back to you whether or not
I'm going to... Packer is a no on this.
Now you're going to ask me whether or not we should have live stats for the bench? Sure. Let them order pizza while they're at it, too. I don't care what you do on the bench. That doesn't even... it's got nothing to do with the game. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Hey, listen, we're not going to wear suits this year. I don't care what you wear. You can wear Bob Huggins sweatpants for all I care. It doesn't affect the game. If you want coaches to have tablets, live stats, pizza orders, eat cheeseburgers at halftime, it does not matter to us. Make the game better. If you want to have all this peripheral stuff, whatever. I mean, that's for people to justify their positions on whatever's on their business card. I don't care. I'm sitting on the couch. How about the rules be changed for the 100% of people who watch ESPN or ACC Network or SEC Network or whatever the case may be that are watching games? We want live programming, but we don't at the last 5 hours. Let's get to the next game. Instead of having one game last 3 hours and 20 minutes, how about we get two games in 4 hours? There's a concept. Let's make the rules simpler. Yeah, listen, if you've been playing basketball your whole life, you know what a foul is. You know what a foul is. So let's get the rules to make the game better as opposed to coming up with some cockamamie idea of, oh my God, the guy flopped from 32 feet. Stop everything. That's a technical. Well, I'm not sure. Did he flop? Well, I don't know. Let's go under the hood. Hey, Wes and Corey, you guys talk about it. We'll get back to you in 5 minutes. Stupid. It is absolutely stupid. It makes zero sense. What else you want?
We'll see.
Can I be on the committee so I can sit there and just rag every single person that opens their mouth in the room and go, dumb idea. What else we have?
We'd have to see who else is on that committee.
I don't even care who's on the committee. It's just a absolutely ridiculously dumb rule. Stupid. I'm done.
By the way, multiple leagues also have experimented with the use of live or archive video through tablets and other devices in recent years. Last year, the Mountain West.
Oh, thank God. You know, and thank God the Mountain West was doing it. Because I was just sitting there the other night last year during the season.
Thinking.
I can't wait to turn on. Yeah, I really want the Mountain West Conference. Can I get the Boise State game on? You know, hey, stop the play. Can we get a shot of the guys on the bench with live stats in the Mountain
West? With the tablets. Ordering pizza. Ordering pizza is my favorite. Yeah.
Who cares? Yeah. Seriously. All right. Who can even
when
come
we come
up
back,
with such terrible ideas? It's amazing.
When we come back, over the weekend, apparently, an alleged Michael Jordan game-worn jersey has sold for nearly $1.4 million. Which raises an interesting question.
Is he on the committee? The guy that bought it, is he on the committee?
How do you know if it's game worn? Aren't you taking somebody's word for it at some point? And how valid is the word? Plus, at your school in the ACC, there's got to be a piece of sports memorabilia you'd love to have. I mean, who wouldn't want the ball Randolph Childress used to beat Carolina in 95? Or how about some of that videotape from the State Maryland game? What about Zion's shoe? We'll cover all that more when we come back. Packer and Durham's Tuesday on ACC Network continues in a moment.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, no flopping. It's a no flopping show today. Not going for it on this program. Find it somewhere else, and you can. 844-SAY-ACCN, the number for the program. All right, it's time to get into stuff. We're going to talk about stuff in this segment.
Yeah, this is stuff. So over the weekend, reports started to surface that an alleged Michael Jordan game-worn jersey was sold at auction for $1.38 million from the 82-83 season.
Flop.
A road jersey, the story behind it, that Stanford manager and all this other stuff exchanged bags with a Carolina manager. Then in the bag was a Michael Jordan game-worn blue jersey. Heritage, I think, who ran the auction, authenticated it to be the same jersey that Jordan was photographed in for Sporting News and all these other things. Anyway, it brings to mind what at your school would be that type of element, okay? For instance, at Duke, would it be the ball from Christian Laettner's shot to beat Kentucky in the regional final at the Spectrum in Philadelphia? At NC State, would it be the Lorenzo Charles dunk in Albuquerque in 83? And if you had to choose between the two, which would you pay more for? You're an ACC fan. You don't have to be a State fan or a Duke fan. You're just an ACC fan. Maybe you're a college basketball fan who's kind of overcome the whole flopping thing. Anyway, Laettner's shot against Kentucky over Darren Feldhaus or Lorenzo Charles's dunk to beat Houston. Pack, you get a choice.
That's easy. This is an easy call. Again, assuming money is no object and they're both available and I can afford both, I would have the Lorenzo Charles alley-oop dunk for the national championship. Laettner's play was great, sensational, but that wasn't a national championship shot. The Charles dunk was. And so I would much rather have the NC State basketball in this particular case.
I would say that of the modern television era of the Final Four, the Lorenzo Charles dunk and the Chris Jenkins shot are about the two biggest moments, wouldn't you say? I mean, I'm not comparing the two, but I'm saying of that moment to win the national title.
Well, I mean, listen, there's a bunch of those moments that immediately pop in your head. But again, the object here is I'm picking between Laettner's shot, which was spectacular, and Lorenzo Charles' dunk, which was the fitting end to one of the most incredible runs that you'd ever see in any sport.
I agree.
For a title. To me, the difference here is, and if I have no rooting
interest.
The national
championship.
Yeah, one's for the national championship. The other one was to put yourself in a position to get to one. And to me, that's a difference.
All right.
That's a big, big difference.
All right. Let's go to football. I got a college football comparison in the ACC for you. Do you want, this is a setup for you, do you want the ball that Deshaun Watson threw to Hunter Renfrow to win Clemson's national championship in Tampa a couple of years ago? Or do you want the ball that Doug Flutie through to Gerard Phelan in the back of the Orange Bowl to beat Miami?
Whether I was a Clemson grad or not, same premise here. I mean, the Flutie Hail Mary, incredible play, no doubt about it. But the other one was to win the national championship. Maybe you put in the Benjamin catch from Winston from Florida State knocking off Auburn in the last BCS national title game against Renfrow, where it's a national championship play versus a national championship play. You can get into it. But for me, just because from a family perspective, and my daughter was at the game, and that was the first time she was able to experience a national championship as a student at Clemson, this is an easy one. I mean, Watson to Renfrow for the W. That's the deal. That was the deal.
Okay.
For me. Again, this is my call.
All right. Here's another one. Randolph Childress's jersey from the 95 ACC tournament or the tape of the 74 ACC title?
Well, I've got the tape of the 74. It's sitting right here. I got to get it to Commissioner Swofford at some point in time when he gets done with that tin roof up there in Greensboro. I'm going to get it to him. But this one, I can't answer because I do have one of them. I got the 1974 ACC Tournament Championship game sitting 6 feet from me. So you're talking about being disqualified from answering a question. I got A, so this is an easy call. Give me the 74 one. And even if I didn't have it in my possession, what Randolph Childress did and was crazy great. But this game was the greatest, period.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a singular moment in conference history for sure.
No question.
All right. I like this one. I like this one because I think this would be tough. And part of this germinates from the story that Jim Nance told us the other day about Billy going out on the floor at the Kingdom to scoop up Bryant Reeves' glass for the moment. Would you rather have Jerome Lane's shattered glass from Fitzgerald Fieldhouse and the dunk against Providence or Zion Williamson's busted shoe from a game that Duke lost?
I want Zion's shoe. Now, I don't want his new shoe, which he just premiered a couple weeks ago with Nike. I want the one he had in Duke where that exploded at impact. I'd showcase that one right there. Yeah, that one. I mean, I hated they got hurt. But, man, that's the shoe. I would want that shoe right there, the one with the sock coming through it. Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Jose Fonseca, by the way, doing an excellent job getting him through the crowd.
Look at that thing, man.
I like the idea of the shoe. I wonder what the shoe would go for. If Jordan's jersey went for 138, I got to believe the shoe's got seven figures in it.
Oh, easy. Easy. And I told you yesterday, if I was Michael Jordan, not that he needs the coin, because he's doing okay for himself. If I was Michael Jordan and I found some fool out there willing to pay $1.4 million, $1.38 to be exact, for a supposedly worn jersey, I'd tell you, I'm going down to Dick's Sporting Goods. And I'm having some 23s printed up, or I call Nike and say, boys, give me some of those authentic.
Sand knit.
Yeah, whatever they are. I want to go retro 1981, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to go work out hitting some golf balls in them, because that's what he does all day. And I'd go wear those. I'd wear 20 of them. I'd wear one every hour. I'd hit balls all day. I'd sweat in them, and I'd put them in a duffel bag for a month, and I'd say, hey, it's paying 1.38.
Who wants a game worn?
Here's the one I wore against Maryland. Here's the one I wore against Georgia Tech and Bobby Crimmins. Here's the one I wore against Terry Holland, Virginia, and Ralph Sanders. Wear 20 of them, Wes. You'd make $30 million. Nike would print them up for you for 11 cents. I mean, that's the easiest investment Jordan's ever made.
But
that's what I do.
Those weren't Nike jerseys.
Excuse me?
They weren't Nike jerseys in 82, 83.
Don't put a Nike on it. Just don't put the swoosh on it. Just print me. Hey, you don't think Nike wouldn't do that for Jordan? It'd do it in 2 seconds.
Well, you got to have the little. That was a sand knit jersey from the Medalist Group did the jerseys. You got to have that. That's what people are looking for. They want it authenticated.
You don't think Under Armour, Nike, anybody else in the business can't come up with one that looks exactly like it?
Well, that's why the.
And here's what
the jersey sold last weekend is under discussion because the term game worn is subjective. There's one side of the story. The auction house that did it says that in their mind it was game worn. Others say no, it was a photograph. It was a promotional jersey used to shoot pictures.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, a guy's listen, you know what? If the guy's dumb enough to pay $1.38 million for it, he's dumb enough to get hoodwinked. That's the way I look at it.
There you go.
If you're stupid enough to write that kind of check for a jersey, you know what? If you ended up getting hosed, quite frankly, I am not. Yeah. I'm about as concerned about that guy as I am Kevin Keats with that new tablet he can potentially have this basketball season on the sideline. It doesn't even concern me.
All right.
Does it?
Here's our last one. Now, what would you pay more for? Ready? Trevor Lawrence's game headband or Chuck Amato's game-worn sunglasses?
Oh, sunglasses, because I could use those. I could use the sunglasses. I mean, the headband, what potential strand of hair from my bald head could cause the problems? I need a headband, like I need another flop call in college basketball. So I'll go with the worn sunglasses from Chuck Amato, because I could use those right there. When I go down to some of those crazy islands apparently we're going to, I could use those right there. Those were fantastic. Chuck Amato.
Remember the remember not only the Oakley sunglasses, remember the red shoes he wore all the time too? Remember when he came with the red shoes?
Chuck Amato. Yeah,
this guy was, he was the man now. It's going to be great when we get on the field.
Oh, he was a character.
Right. Don't forget, you can add your own for us, hashtag Packer in Durham. And we'll get to more in the next hour, too. We got plenty more of this. Making you think, what would you want more? When we come back, we had a great visit yesterday. Georgia Tech third baseman Justin Henry Malloy joined us. We're looking forward to showing you that. Don't forget, Friday night, we've got game one of a big ACC baseball series. Clemson and number 17 Florida State. Coverage starts from Dick Houser Stadium at Mike Martin Field at 6 o'clock right here on ACC Network. Streaming live on the ESPN app. Hard to believe Justin Henry Malloy was not the ACC Player of the Week. He had a walk-off on Saturday for the Jackets to beat Clemson as Tech swept the Tigers over the weekend. You'll hear for the young man from New Jersey next on Packer in Durham here on ACC Network.
The Packer in Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. David Teal will join us coming up at the top of the hour. A lot to discuss with him. But baseball is in the air, Mr. Durham, and nobody had a better weekend than Georgia Tech. Sweep Clemson, now top of the standings in the Coastal Division, and the Jackets on a roll at the right time of the year.
And as you said in the opening segment, we're headed for some terrific finishes, I think, on both divisions in college baseball. Looking forward to it. But Justin Henry Malloy had a huge weekend in the Georgia Tech sweep of Clemson. And we asked him just how big it was to get a sweep at such an important part of the season.
Absolutely. I think with how our season's been going, kind of riding the ups and downs, I think that was a big statement weekend, and I'm happy we were able to do it. We haven't had a weekend like that since NC State, which was in the real beginning of the season. So I think that'll kind of build us going forward.
Justin, a lot of things can happen in a weekend in ACC baseball, and we've learned with kind of the, you know, the abbreviated midweek schedule, and I know you guys have big week games coming up, especially the one against Georgia at home next week, that kind of thing. But to win on Friday night against Clemson, did you just feel the momentum building? Here come the Tigers. They've been playing very well. You guys had kind of scuffled a little bit. That's Coach Hall's term, not mine. What does the Friday night win mean to the rest of the weekend?
I think Friday is a huge win in all series, not just this one. It sets the tone for the weekend. It allows for us to just kind of build off of what we did. And it kind of, you know, takes some pressure off. Not to say that there's not pressure going into Saturday or Sunday, but winning Friday night allows you to know that we need to win one more game to clinch a series. And we did that. And I think it was awesome to be able to win on Friday night. And it kind of just kept the momentum for us going into Saturday and then Sunday.
Okay, Friday's one thing, but let's talk about Saturday. All right, let's talk about how that bad boy ended on Saturday. Where all of a sudden, the second it left the bat, you had to go, ball game. Let's walk this thing off.
Yeah, it was kind of a surreal feeling. Just off the bat, I was kind of like, oh, wow. Like, it was a great feeling. On Friday night, I hit a ball pretty good, and it got caught right at the wall. So I was kind of nervous with the ball leaving the bat. I was really hoping that it would leave the ballpark. But, I mean, I put a good swing on it in a plus count for me, and I was able to kind of help us out. So it was a fun weekend for us. It's a moment that I'll have forever. My family was here. They haven't been down here since the Pitt series. And I gave the ball to my mom, DH found the ball, gave it to me after the game. And I gave the ball to my mom. Happy early Mother's Day.
Oh, very cool. That's excellent. That is cool.
Yeah. All right, so the walk-off Saturday, and then yesterday, I mean, you come off the 6-5 win Saturday, and then yesterday you guys fall behind, what, 5-0 before,
six.
You know, hey, by the way,
6-0
before you're trying to get this thing back in gear, right?
Yes. I mean, I think that was kind of not really a culture shock, but it was more like, okay, like we're in a ball game. This isn't a dead team, a Clemson team that's coming in very hot. Although we did just beat them twice, this is still a very good team. So they kind of punched us in the mouth. So it was kind of a character building moment where we got to figure out whether we're going to come back and, you know, win this thing, or we could just kind of lay down and just say, all right, we clinched the series. This game really doesn't matter. And I think it was a great sign for us to be able to kind of just be able to punch back, not lay down, and just kind of get runners on base and do what we do and just kind of chip away. We ended up not really chipping away. We had a big seven-run inning, but it was good. It was a great moment for us, and I'm proud of our team. I'm very proud.
Justin, it's one thing to say, hey, we got the sweep against a team that's red hot, but it also puts you in first place in the Coastal standings. I know you can't do so much scoreboard watching. You still got business at hand. Got the tournament coming up here in 2 or 3 weeks. But big picture, despite the ups and the downs, I mean, you do keep score. And the fact that, hey, today, Georgia Tech's in first place should mean something, shouldn't it?
Absolutely, it should. I think it's a great thing that we're in first place. But at the same time, the job's not over. We have plenty more series to go. We got Miami right in front of us. And then after that, we got UNC. So just kind of not thinking big picture, just kind of taking it day by day, week by week. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is a good thing that we're in first place, but we do have a lot more work to do.
I can tell you, when we do best plays of the week, you have appeared multiple times down there on third base making some serious, serious plays with the glove. More satisfaction at the plate or with your defense?
It's equal. It's all equal. Defense could lead to hitting, or hitting could lead to defense. It really doesn't matter to me. They all hold the same amount of weight. But still pretty cool to, you know, make some defensive plays and, you know, just kind of do it on both sides of the ball, not being one-dimensional. So just trying to – still working on defense, still working on everything. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun.
All right, let's get to the apparel. We saw three different looks in the home series against Clemson. We saw the navy blue tops. We saw the pinstripes. And then we saw what I'm going to call the honeybee look on Sunday. I don't know what you guys call it. Now, Packer and I were talking to you during the break. You kind of like the honeybee Sunday. Is that what you – well, first of all, what do you guys call that jersey?
Oh, we just call them the golds. We don't really, you know, have any type of name for them. But, you know, personally, I like them. I think they're different. Just gold on gold, and I think it's a good look. It's not too bad, but like you said, I feel like younger guys like us like pretty different stuff. So
that's it.
Yeah,
I do not mind them whatsoever, and they're really comfortable. So that actually plays a huge part in how much I like these uniforms. They're really comfortable. They're light, but I love them.
All right. Yeah. Do you have another color combination that you like better than that one?
My favorite are the pinstripes.
All right.
Those are easily my favorite. I'm a big Yankee fan. I love wearing pinstripes. I have a little picture of me when I was about 7 years old on Halloween wearing pinstripes. So I love pinstripes. But I would say other than that, I like our new combination of the blue top and white pants.
See, I do too. Okay. I gotta be honest with you. If I had to rank them, this is just me, I would have ranked them Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But I like the pinstripes too. I you know, some teams can pull that off. Like, for example, you transferred from Vandy. When Vandy wears their black and their gold pinstripe, my eyes hurt. I'd say some pinstripes don't work. Some don't work. And Vandy's got a great club. You know that. But it just doesn't look right. It looks like just a bad comic book idea. All right. It's just like, no, let's go back to the drawing board. Some teams can pull that off and some can't. But for me, Your Friday would be one, your Saturday was two, and your Sunday was three. That's just me.
Absolutely respect it. I love the Friday unis as well. So, but I have to say the pinstripes are my favorite.
Of course, Justin Henry Malloy also prefaced that by saying he was a Yankees fan too. So there you go. Right.
Of course. Yeah. Good player though. That was a big series for Georgia Tech. And Danny Hall's teams had some ups and downs like just about everybody else. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's May, and it's now middle of May, and this ACC tournament, which is going to be played right here in Charlotte coming up at the end of the month, is going to be fascinating. Not only the race is going to be good coming down this stretch, but who qualifies and the depth of the league, Wes, we keep talking about. The depth is really, really good, and I think we've got four teams ranked in the D1 poll that came out yesterday, and again, Notre Dame's been a great story, but they finally suffered their first series loss over the weekend by Florida State. Noles are playing good baseball. Pitt's been a great story. Georgia Tech's been on fire. But everybody, for the most part, kind of had a sense of what the top 25 feels like. So at the ACC baseball tournament in Charlotte, if you're fortunate enough to check it out, great ballpark. Not a good. Great ballpark. Be a great scene and should be a tremendous tournament.
Yep, and we'll have some coverage of it for you here on ACC Network, and including semifinals and finals. Looking forward to that. Also looking forward to talking to David Teal coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, along with Carolina field hockey coach Karen Shelton as well, on the heels of their, pardon the pun, third national championship in a row. And just kind of the way all of that came about. A lot of tight, sudden victory, overtime situations for the Tar Heels, and more. But when we come back, our friend David Teal joins the show in the 8 o'clock hour. We talk about Jim Phillips and his tour of the ACC. Teal had a front row seat at Virginia Tech and Virginia last week. He'll tell us about that and what to expect from the spring meetings this week next.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.